metaphysical shield.
Okay, so we are beginning Perek Yud Ches, chapter 18. So last we left off, David had defeated Goliath in battle, and really at the very end of the Perek, so Shaul, in the very last pasuk, the last verse of chapter 17, Shaul says, "Ben miata anar," you know, "who are you?" Vayomer David, and David says, "Ben avdecha Yishai beis halachmi," "I'm the son of your servant from beis lechem." You know, he's a very humble answer, and that takes us right into the next. That takes us right into the next pasuk. The next pasuk says, "Vayehi kichaloso v'daber el Shaul," and it was when he finished speaking to Shaul, "V'nefesh Yehonasan nikshra b'nefesh David," the soul of Yehonasan was tied to the soul of David. "Vayaveu Yehonasan kinafsho," and Yehonasan loved David kinafsho, like himself. So, two things we see here. We see, first of all, the Navi is making some kind of connection, it seems. And it was when David finished speaking to Shaul, and his soul was tied to the soul of Yehonasan. There seemed to be some connection between Yehonasan's love for David, perhaps his connection to David, and David speaking to Yehonasan. So I saw the Mishpatzot Zav. He wants to suggest that it's the idea that it was David's humility that attracted, that brought Yehonasan close to him. And because, as we said, David answered very humbly to Shaul, and when somebody's humble, so it's easier if your people, becomes more approachable, more liked, and it was that humility that allowed Yehonasan to connect to David. Now, what does this mean, that his soul was nikshara b'nefesh David? So it sounds like perhaps a Kabbalistic idea, and that indeed is what some of our Shemorin, Kuyakar, on Shmuel. So he learns that there was this extreme, you know, love that they had between themselves. And he says the Mekubalim say in general that when you have a very strong love between two people, so it's an indicator that somehow their souls are closer together, are connected somehow. You know, all souls ultimately are connected at the highest level of spiritual existence in the Olam HaNeshamos, or the Sharish HaNeshamos, the highest Olam that's spoken about in the Olam HaAtzilus, or higher than the Olam HaAtzilus. That's the highest level that's spoken about in Kabbalistic speak. So over there, all the souls are connected, which is perhaps on a Kabbalistic level the general concept of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, you should love your friend like yourself. The Ramak Moshe Kardavero explains, because ultimately every person is you. Everybody is connected. Their souls are all connected at the source. But it seems from here that there's also a concept of two people being more connected, and somehow their souls maybe run closer to each other in that line of souls coming down from that the root, the Shoresh HaNeshamos, and so that's what they suggest is going on here, is that when it says Nefesh Yehonasan Nikshara B'Nefesh David, that the soul of Yehonasan was tied to the soul of David by Yahweh Meod, and he loved him very much. It was natural because their souls were interconnected in that way on a Kabbalistic level. Now, the Mishnah in Avos tells us that there's something called an Ava She'ena Tluya V'Davar. There's love that's not dependent on anything, and I think it says that love isn't broken, because if you take away, there's nothing that's dependent on that. If you take it away, so that love falters. And it says, the Mishnah says, that this is the love of Yehonasan and David. What's an ahava she'ina tluya b'davar? An ahava, a love that's not dependent on anything, is a love that, like Yehonasan and David. So what was it? What's so unique? What was so special about their love? What do we mean that it wasn't dependent on anything? What?
Not depending on anything, nothing physical.
Okay, that's definitely an approach in some of Farshim, yeah, that it's spiritual. The Kliyakar says that this wasn't an ava of just like getting along. What he calls avas ha'arev, it wasn't just like, okay, you know, we jive, we connect, we're similar. Like avas hana'arim, like the love of lads. And he says it wasn't avas ha'moil, which I guess is that it wasn't that they could benefit each other. It was avas ha'tov v'mashi tov. It was just a love of the goodness that was inside of him. That ava, the way that it's described is in speaking about the shleimus of the nefesh, the completeness, the perfection of that person on a, you know, their soul, their very being. And he says that was the idea here. That he said he has two approaches. Either he says nefesh Yonasan Nikshra b'nefesh David, by Yaveh Yehonasan kinafsho, and he loved him as his soul. So either it's referring to David's soul, that, and it's hard to read in the word kid and like, but that's one suggestion he has, that it was that he loved David at his soul, at his very being, just for the goodness that was in him. Or it was kinafsho, like we said, that it was like he's like himself. Maybe he saw some of himself in David. The Rabbeinu Yonah Avos explains that the idea over here, the way that we see that this love was Eina Tluya B'Davar, it was not dependent on anything, was that you see almost the opposite, that even though Yehonasan was aware that David was going to be taking his place, right? Yehonasan's the son of Shaul. You would think he would be the next king. And he was fully aware that David was going to end up being the king, and even still, as we'll see, it didn't affect their friendship, and Yonasan stood up for David and helped him, and that love was there throughout.
But it seems to start off one-sided. It doesn't say.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I think I saw something about there also that there's a kri and ksiv here, vayel havehu vehu without the hay, and it's read as vayel havehu. And I think I saw someone say, I don't remember where I saw it, that may speak to these two different ideas. That one of them grammatically would mean that he loved him just in general, and one of them was that it was reciprocal. And it's trying, and it's telling you that it was both. Now, the pasuk here calls Yehonasan with a hey, right? Yehonasan. So, the Radak points this out, and the Radak says that up until now, In all of Sefer Shmuel, I don't know how many times we've seen Yonasan, but up until now, he's always been called Yonasan, except twice where he was Yehonasan. From here on till the end of the Sefer, he's always called Yehonasan. It doesn't change. And he doesn't explain what the difference is. So the Kliyakar says,
how do we know it's the same person?
I think it's clear. He's Yonasan ben Shaul the whole time. It's, unless he had two sons, right? But even earlier, it interchanges it, even speaking about the same person. It goes Yonasan, and then like the next pasuk. I think the Kliyakar points that out. He says it's very clear, because in this very same pasuk, it switches. So the Kliyakar says that we have to, you know, to understand this, you have to look back at where the other two places that it calls him Yehonasan were, and they were both back in that episode where he kind of went out on his own to fight the Plishtim and miraculously defeated them, and he set up that challenge, and he said, if they won't approach, then I will fight them, and he killed 20 Plishtim. So that was back in Perek Yudalid, chapter 14, Pasuk Vav.
easy to target prohibition. One of them is two important ones that we're going to focus a little bit on today.
So over there, right, basically the Plishtim are threatening. They have a huge army. And it says, Vayomer Yehonasan with a hey, El Hanar Nose Kalev, to his lad, Lechav in Abrel Matzava Erlima Eile, let's go and to this group of uncircumcised ones, the Plishtim, Ulai Yase Hashem Lanu. Maybe Hashem will make a miracle for us. King Hashem Matzor Loshia Bravamat, because Hashem, there's nothing stopping Hashem from bringing salvation with many or with few. And then, two psukim later, Vayomer Yehonasan, Ne'anachno Ovrim al Anashim, B'niglinu Aleihem. We're approaching them and we're going to reveal ourselves to them. And then he sets up this challenge. If they will say, wait where you are until we come to you, so then we're not going to fight them. And if they say, come to us, then we'll fight them. So those are the two places where it has the name Yehonasan. So what's special about those two places? The Kuyakar says that in both of these instances, there's kind of a spirit of Hashem coming over him. That, to make the decision to approach the Plishtim with all odds against him was, just in a way miraculous. It was only a spirit of strength that must have come over him. And also to set up to say, if they approach us, then we'll fight them, or to set up this deal, or this this thing where he says if they'll approach me, then we're not going to fight them, and if we approach them, but if they say come to us, then we will fight them.
This condition,
when he sets that up, so there was a spirit of Hashem that settled over him, and that's what the hay represents, is the special spirit of Hashem coming over him. And now from the moment that he really connects with David and on, that spirit remains with him. The Kuyakar brings another example where we see someone get a hey added to their name, and that's Yosef. We have in Tehillim, we say, I think on Thursdays, Edus Yosef Samo, that there's a testimony about Yosef, but it spells it's Yehosef.
Is it because of Yud Hey is Hashem's name?
It could be. I'm not sure. It could be.
Why else would you say Hey?
Right. I don't know. You're right. It's
because
right.
Yosef starts with a Yud.
Right. Yeah. No, it very much makes sense. I think there is something about that with Yehonasan's name.
It's a fragment of Hashem.
Right. So by Yosef, we say there in that parak of Tehillim, we say that... that the idea there is he goes out to Mitzrayim and he knows all 70 languages. And again, that's something that he can only really know with that spirit of Hashem passing over him. And that's what's represented by the hay over there as well. So from here on out, we're going to see that Yehonasan always has a hay. Vayikacheu, Pasuk Beis. Vayikacheu Shaul Vayomahu. And Shaul took him on that day, and he didn't allow him to return to his father's home. So I saw that different Mefarshim understand Shaul's intent differently, in two opposite ways. Some learn that at this point, Shaul, he likes David, he's happy that he defeated Goliath, and he wants him, he doesn't want him going home to shepherd sheep anymore, he wants him to be a general and to be a warrior and to fight for him. That's one idea. The Al-Sheikh says totally the opposite, right? As they say, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Shaul was concerned that David would go off on his own and rally an army and rebel and try to take over the kingdom. So he didn't let David go home anymore. He kept him close, and that way he would not be able to attempt a rebellion. By Yichros Yehonasan v'David bris be'avaso oso kenafsho. And Yehonasan and David cut. They established a bris, a covenant, in that he loved him, and he loved him like himself. And what? How did they pull off this bris? Vayispashet Yehonasan es ha-me'il asher alav, and Yehonasan removed the me'il, the shirt that he was wearing. Vayitneyu le-David, he gave it to David u'madav, and his clothes or his armor. Ve'ad harbo, ve'ad kashto, ve'ad chagoro, his sword and his bow and his belt, and he gave David his whole, you know, royal garb, his whole uniform. Yehonasan gave to David. That's how he made a covenant. That's how they made this covenant of friendship. The Malbim points out this wasn't a covenant like sometimes we find, like with you know, this past week's parsha, let's say, with Lavan and Yaakov, where it's a covenant, you know, to remind us not to attack each other, right, to make peace. This was just a covenant of love. It doesn't say what it meant, you know, but I guess, as we'll see, they'll watch out for each other, etc. It's interesting to think about this pasuk and this idea of giving him, making covenant and giving him his clothing in light of what the Vilna Gaon says, the idea behind a krisas bris, is cutting a bris. Why do we, kurias means to cut. Why do we cut a bris, a covenant, right? I mean, besides for a bris milah, right? Obviously we cut a bris milah, but in general we have that terminology, to cut a bris, to cut a covenant. So what's that idea? Vilna Gaon says that the idea is that it's like when you have, you know, basically this case, when you have, I think he quotes this, when you have two good friends, no, he doesn't quote this, but it's this idea, when you have two good friends, and they're parting from each other, and they want to remember each other, so they give themselves, they give something of themselves, they like cut something away from themselves to give to the other person, so that they will always remember them wherever they go. And that's the idea of a bris. A bris is where we cut something from ourselves and we give it, you know, sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's conceptual, but we give up a part of ourselves to the other, and then, you know, Hashem gives us his Torah and we give ourselves over to observe the Torah, and that's a bris. We cut a bris milo, we're cutting a part of ourselves away for Hashem. And by giving something up from ourselves, so the idea is you give it to the other one so that they'll remember you wherever you are. And that's what Yonasan is doing here. He's giving David his clothes, so David will remember him, you know, will remember him wherever he goes. Okay. Pasuk Hey, Vayetze David b'chol asher yishlachenu Shaul yaskil, and David would go out, and wherever Shaul would send him, he would have success. Vayisimeu Shaul al anshei hamilchama, and Shaul placed him on the men of battle. Vayitav be'enei kol ha'am v'gam be'enei avdei Shaul, and it was good in the eyes of the nation, and also in the eyes of the servants of Shaul, meaning the direct servants. Not the whole nation is servants of Shaul in a way, but the those who are working directly under Shaul. So Shaul has made David, I think, a general in the army, a leader, and wherever he goes, he's successful in battle. Right? Yeah, it says, and he put him on Anshei HaMelchama, he put him in charge of the battles, and not only was the nation happy, but even the servants of Shaul were happy, even though, as the Radak says, even though David was certainly taking someone's position, and all of a sudden there's a new person in charge of them, but even still, the Avdei Shaul found favor in their eyes, and they liked him. Vayhi bivoam Bishuv David me'akosas ha'plishti, and it was when they came, when David returned from fighting the Plishti, va'teitzena hanashim mikol arei Yisrael, And the women came out from all the cities of Israel, Lashir, to sing the Mecholos, and they had some kind of instrument. Mechol is also a dance in a circle, but I think this refers to some kind of circular instrument in this case.
It says timbrels.
Timbers? Timbals?
Timbrels.
Timbrels. Likra Shaul HaMelech, to greet Shaul, Besupim, with drums, Besimcha, Uveshalom, with joy and with peace, and that's how the women came out when David was returning. What? Oh, sorry. Thank you. Uveshalishim. Yeah, sorry. Right, as shalom. Uveshalishim and some kind of three-pieced instrument.
This is important, but why does it? Why do they spell lashir lashur? Like, is there? From the context, what it
yeah, it's a kriyuk siv. The Radak says that they mean the same thing, to sing. Like l'shorer is also to sing. I don't. No, it's a good question. But I don't know. I don't know.
The E vowel and the U vowel are very closely related in linguistics. They're almost interchangeable. And in ancient times, the Yod and the Vav, right, were almost interchangeable. For example, you would have the Reach, right, which means moon. Berach, right, was a more ancient form.
Yeah, it's like a chassidic. That's how they say E instead of U.
Exactly. That's an excellent example.
What was the
example?
We went to see the traveling chassidim.
Exactly.
The chassidim say U instead of E.
Pronunciation of Hebrew.
I
thought they did it to make me laugh. To make me laugh. I love when they do that.
So it's interesting. We'll come back to this pasuk in a second. Let's see the next pasuk. Vatanena hanashim ha-mesachkos, and the women who were mesachkos, playing, joking, laughing, vatomarna, and they said, Hika Shaul Balafav. Shaul hit with thousands, with his thousands. The David Bruvosav, and David with his tens of thousands. And we could just see the three words in the next pasuk, Vayichar l'shal ma'od. This got Shaul very angry. So we'll slow down and we'll see this again. But so they're coming back. We have to figure out when this is happening, because it says, Vayhi bevoam, b'shuv, back to the beginning of pasuk Vav, it says, Vayhi bevoam, and it wasn't when they were coming, b'shuv David me'akos es ha'plishti, when David was returning from striking the plishti. So it sounds like this is on their way home from victory over Goliath. And the women are coming out, and they're basically seemingly praising David in front of Shaul, and making fun of, mocking Shaul. And this gets Shaul very angry, and he's from now on, he doesn't like David, as we'll see. So the problem is, if this is on the way home from battle, then what's all the previous psukim about how he made him his general, and he seemed to make him prominent? And here we have that. So when did everything happen? Did he, if this was on the way home from fighting that Goliath the Plishti, what?
How could it be? He'd only killed one person. Here's his tens of thousands. So, I mean, and obviously in context, it's after he appoints him over the army.
Right. So to answer that question, just for those who will learn, I think that it happened before, is that the results of killing Goliath was mass destruction of the Plishtim. So David's actions brought about, many, many Plishti deaths. And obviously they're being, they're exaggerating. And so
Shaul was still king. So yeah. Does he get credit for his army? Still,
well, that's
army.
The problem, is that they aren't giving it to him, right? So that's why Shaul is angry, right? So I think there are Mefarshim who learned that this happened right on their way home, from killing the Plishti, as it reads simply. And I guess that would... I'm assuming, I didn't see this inside, I'm assuming the Alshich learned that way just because of what we said earlier, that he learned that the reason why Shaul didn't let David go home was because he wanted to keep him close. Although, okay, that doesn't necessarily have to be, because that could have just been he saw he had what it takes to be the king, and he suspected that something might happen. He wanted to keep him close.
Yeah, but so, it also says, and Ovid went forth, and in whatever Shaul would send him to do, he would be successful.
Right.
So
right.
There had to be intervening battles.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So I think, like Mr. Sapper is holding. That's also how the Malbim says. The Malbim tries to explain what this pasuk means, and it was or right. When did this happen? Again, it's difficult because it sounds like this is on the way home from killing the Plishti, and the women are praising David over Shaul, and Shaul is getting angry at David. So. When did this happen? So the Malbim says that it happened as follows. When after the original battle, Shaul remained in that area, in Emek Ha'ala. And it was from there that he fought many more battles, and that's where he had David going out and leading the Jews in battle, and that's where David was very successful. And then after that, now Shaul is finally ready. Okay, he's done with fighting for now, and he's ready to go back to his home in Givah Shaul. And now he's on his way, home. That's Vayhi Bivoam, when they were coming. Coming is you come home. Vayhi Bivoam, and it was when they were coming home. And
what's the significance of Nashim, like, for both the pasuks?
Okay, we'll get... Let's, yeah. Well, why, you mean that it was women singing?
Yeah, I mean, why not, like, the nation of Israel was joyous, and why we... I'm just curious what the significance
okay,
is.
We'll come back to it.
How old was David supposed to be when he was elevated?
What?
How old was David supposed to be?
How old is he now?
Yeah,
I'm not
he was
sure.
Elevated. I mean, he started off as nothing, and then
I'm not sure. He's young. He's still young. I'm not sure exactly how old.
Is there a period of time that seems to elapse? You know, not a trivial time between the time he gets the suit of these clothes from Joshua, and then he gets goes out, and maybe a period of years.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure how much. Doesn't say how much time has passed, but so now they're on their way home from battle. And now is where, if you look back in the last parak, so it says in Pasuk Nun Dalet 54, Vaykach David es Rosh HaPlishti, and David took the head of the Plishti, Vayivyeu Yerushalayim, and he brought it to Yerushalayim. So when was that? So the Malbim says that's now. Now, after they've finished up, you know, all these battles in Emek Ha'ala, now they're going on the world tour, you know, with Goliath's head, and carrying it around to show into the different cities of Eretz Yisrael until they get to Yerushalayim, and it's then that, you know, during this grand tour of Goliath's head, that the Nashim, that the women now come out and they praise David. Now what were they saying? Before we get to why women or what we see from that, but what were they saying?
Well, I think tens of thousands might not be literal.
Right.
Be, you know, like,
I would assume it's poetic, but
probably like Goliath is like equivalent to 10,000. 10 times.
Okay, you want to say that it's all speaking about just the, but we're saying now that David's fought many battles since then. We're assuming.
Jerusalem still a pagan city at that point?
Jerusalem was still under the
Jebusites.
Yeah,
so he brought it there, I guess, to show to scare the enemy, so to speak.
That could be.
Didn't you say that the women were singing when he had Goliath's head? So
yeah, but this is all, according to the Malbim, this is all after, you know, in order to understand in context why at this point Shaul is still his friend, right? And after this, Shaul is doesn't like him. So all those battles that are described earlier in the parak have to have happened before this, or seemingly happened before this. And also, just the general idea that they're saying, oh, David, you know, he kills so many, speaks to this idea that he's already not just killed Goliath, but he's fought many battles already, like is described earlier in the Perek. So what the Malbim is saying is after they fought Goliath, they stayed in that area in Emekala and continued having battles with Plishtim. David grew in greatness and in his leadership, and now they're finally ready to go back home. And now Bivoam, when they come home to give Ashal, so on their way, they're showing off Goliath's head, and that's when the women come out. Now, if you look in the first pasuk about that, so it says they went out likras Shaul Hamelech. They came out to greet Shaul. They're not coming to for David. They're coming for Shaul to give proper respect to the king on his way home.
Where does it say that?
In
Pasuk
Vav.
Yeah,
and then in Pasuk Zayin, it says, Vatanena hanashim hamesachakos. So the Malbim says that not everyone was saying this. The nashim hamesachakos were saying this. The ones, the jokesters, or the, you know, this was a specific group of women who were saying this. He says, not the regular mishororos, those who were the normal ballad singers. But these were, and don't write the normal singer, the normal ballad writers. They wrote like it was. They didn't. But these were more. The Malbim has a very interesting approach here. He says that they like to like put a cute spin on it and make it like double entendre that you can understand it in two different ways. And he says they didn't really mean to like you know praise David over Shaul so much. What they, because the truth is, well, what do they mean when they say David, Shaul hit with thousands, and David hit with tens of thousands? Who are those thousands and who are those tens of thousands? So, okay, so some of our Shemorim, it refers to how many Plishtim they hit. But the Malbim says, no, it means, how big was his army? David, that Yonasan struck with just an army of thousands, but David struck with an army of tens of thousands, and they meant that as a praise of Shaul, that he only needed a smaller army to strike, and David needed a much larger army, and he says that's what they meant, but that's not how that because they're the Mesachkos though they I guess they don't make it clear what they mean, and Shaul misunderstood. Shaul understood like we're understanding that. No, sorry. He says like joking or
like playing.
Playing, yeah, Mesachik. So.
So maybe they were just teasing him. Like
right, so yeah, it could. That's probably the pashup shot, the simple reading. The Malbim saying it's a little bit more than that. They like maybe teasing. Maybe they do this. They try to say things like in a deliberately unclear way, and Shaul understood that they were speaking about how many people he heard. Right, it's what you're saying. What's heard? They said Shaul fights with thousands and David fights with tens of thousands. Look, Shaul is so much stronger. But he heard, well, David has tens of thousands with him. You know, David is much more popular than I am. That's how the Malbim understood. Other Mefarshim learn the more simple pshat that they're just speaking about how many they killed. Yeah. But other Mefarshim just learn it's how many Plishtim they killed. And they're praising David for killing so many more Plishtim than Shaul, and that's why Shaul gets angry.
So one thing that we talked about a few weeks ago was that like the spirit of Hashem left Shaul, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't really talk about that for the last couple of weeks, but it talked about it before. So maybe something that we haven't really been focusing on, but what was going on all along is he wasn't the greatest leader, and there were a lot of signs that Shaul's days were numbered. So maybe it really has nothing to do with what just happened, but sort of like the stuff that's not written in your...
Well, you mean it's like a build-up of... You're saying it's all the things combined. It's the spirit leaving him. It's David being victorious.
But there's a lot of stuff that happened. You know, this might be several years. Who knows how long? There might be several other things that happened that are not written down.
Right. And I mean, even the things that we saw. To your point. But this wasn't wasn't because of this. But this was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. He had the spirit leave him, and he had, you know, David is the one who kills Goliath, and David is the one who is being so successful. And all of this is starting to get to Shaul, right? And now, all of a sudden, he hears it. You know, before this, it's all in his head. But now he...
This is when the light bulb really went off, and like he realized that there's a problem. This is like the defining moment.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this is, right, that's what the Malbim, you know, he says, Me'ata yisaper eich pitam. Yeah, basically this is like, all of a sudden now everything turns around. So up until now he kind of tolerated David, and because David was doing great things for him. And so he was... maybe overlooking the issues that he had. But now, this was too much for him.
David, at this point, stopped doing what was good for Shaul, stopped singing, as far as we could tell, unless he came back for the Lord, took up his lyre. That's what
in the next psukim, he's going to be back at it.
I mean, that's what calmed Shaul down.
Yeah, no, it's not going to help. We'll see. In a few psukim, it's going to be... We're gonna see that it's not gonna help. Okay, so we can't avoid the question though of the women singing here, right? What's going on?
She was singing by the Shira, she was the bird, everyone liked to sing on
it. Right, we have it by the Yam also.
That was just the women were singing among themselves. Yeah, it sounds like the men heard them.
Right. So in the poskim there is generally this idea that if women are singing together and you can't hear any individual voice, so then it's permitted. The Sefer HaMakneh, on Kiddushin, written by the Hafla, so he is discussing the Gemara that talks about the idea of Kol Be'isha Erva, that a woman's voice is like Erva, that a woman's not allowed to sing in front of men. And he says, I didn't go through this so perfectly carefully, I saw it quoted, but at the end, he says that
studying things that are tainted by Christian religious intentions, again, as much as that might be part and parcel of their religion, that itself is not the Avodah Zarah. That's not really the issue. The issue is looking at actual idols that they bring back from Africa, the totem pole, the actual things they worship, or actual things.
Okay, so he's actually he's coming at it more from the side of the men, that were they allowed to listen to this singing? And he says, what?
Why not?
Well, just like he's talking about, right, a man is not allowed to look at something that's not tznius, that is not allowed to look at certain things.
So, I mean, that Gemara was talking about Shema. While you're dominating, you're not supposed to listen to it. It's not talking about...
So there's two Gemaras. That's what he's going through here. There's two different Gemaras, and one of them seems to be talking about during davening, and one of them is just in general. And he says that even in davening, he brings down Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, it's brought in the Beis Yosef, that even if you hear a woman singing, so as long as you can have kavana with tefillah in such a way that you're not listening to it and not paying attention, so you're allowed to still daven or say Shema. He says that the Magen Avraham, and he says the same thing if you're seeing something that you're not supposed to see, but if you're not concentrating on it, then you can still daven. And he says that you have a little bit of a proof from here by in this from this pasuk, because right, basically it depends. If you hold that it will be a problem on a Daraisa level, so then you would have a proof from here. But if you hold that it's only a problem on the Rabbanon level, so then you wouldn't see anything from here because the Gzeira Rabbanon may not have happened yet. But again, I'm a little confused because he seems to be talking about, at this point, about saying Shema or davening.
I mean, that's not the question I was asking, like, whether they're singing right or not. My question is, why is it significant that women did this and not that,
I mean, that
Israel or...
You're saying, let's say it was just women, but you're saying you prefer that the pasuk still say, make it more general?
No, no, even? My question is, why...
Why did the women do it?
Yeah, is there something significant that it was the woman who...
Okay, let's start at base one.
Yeah.
Let's say it was only the women that did it. Now you want to know either why the Navi specifically tells us that it was the women who did it?
Well, I mean, if it was the woman, then like why would then it'd be interesting? Like, why would the woman do it and not the rest of the men? Is it because all the men were in battle? And I'm just curious.
It could be that. It could be that women like to sing. Could be that this like they got, you know, they got excited, and this is how they responded.
I have a cultural answer, if the rabbi would indulge me.
Okay, please.
In ancient Semitic societies, the women would sing battle victory songs. Among the Arabs, they used to do that. In fact, among ancient Semitic societies, they used to bring women into battle to sing the battle songs during the battle. So this was
typical.
Right, this is very, very much in line with ancient Semitic culture, right? That the women, right, would sing these songs with triumph.
Did that for other purposes.
What?
They brought the women for other purposes.
I don't know that.
Drag,
I do not know that.
I once heard that the reason why that they played with these instruments, so you wouldn't be able, the men wouldn't be able to hear them.
It's like at weddings, you know, you can't actually hear the person singing, the music's so loud.
There's a difference, the significance in different regions of the country, because it says they came from all over Israel. And it doesn't say what significance that they came from all over Israel instead of, you know, Israel instead of just, you know, something.
Right.
Here
it could mean as they passed each city, okay. But right, it
and
could be
some
that they
of them were, you know, were a little bit, you know, this, and some of them were, you know, more generalized in their prayers.
Okay. Okay. Let's do a little bit more. Vayichar l'shaul ma'od, and Shaul got very angry. This is verse Ches 8, and the matter was very bad in his eyes. Vayomer, and he said, Nasnu David Revavos. They give David tens of thousands. Vili Nasnu Ha'arafim, and to me they only give thousands. Right, again, either if they were talking about the how many pushed and they killed, or how many Jews rallied to them. The Od Lo Acha Melucha, and it's just a matter of time. He's also going to have the kingdom. So, you know, he's like a navi. You know, he's Inga Yodea Mashnis Navi. He doesn't realize what he's saying, but indeed he's going to be the king. By he Shaul Oyenes Dovin, and Shaul was like, he eyed him, the eyeing Ra. He gave him a bad eye. He kept his eye on him. Mayoma Huvahala from that day on and on. Vahimi Macharas, and it was the next day, Vatitzlach Ruach Elokim Ra'al Shaul, and a bad spirit of Hashem passed over Shaul, Vayisnabe Besoch HaBayis, and he prophesied inside the house, but this is not, he's not actually having a prophecy, this is like Divrei Shtus, he's hallucinating, or...
says raved incoherently.
Raved incoherently. Okay, yeah, he's having like visions or something. And v'David menaging biyado kiyom biyom. And here's David, and he's playing the music like every day to calm Shaul. V'achanes biyad Shaul, and Shaul is holding a spear. So you could see where this is going.
This is a dream, right?
No, this is happening.
How do we know? He's hallucinating about this? I mean, maybe that's what he was thinking. How do we know?
It doesn't seem like that, because we're going to see that there's actually, yeah, the David was there. Vayatel Shaul Esachanis, and Shaul took the spear. Vayomer, and he said, Akev David uvakir. I'm going to strike David and the wall, meaning I'm going to put this spear right through David so it lodges in the wall. And he tried that. Vayisov David mipanov pa'amayim. And David avoided him twice. So he made two attempts to strike at David, and David avoided it twice. Now the Malbim says that that Shaul wanted to do this in such a way that it looked, he wanted to make it look like he wasn't, you know, this wasn't intended. I think he was just, you know, having target practice with the wall, and that's what he was trying to make it look. And yet, with Hashgacha, David wasn't watching. His eyes were on the harp, the Malbim says. And he didn't see what Hashem was doing, what Shaul was doing. But Hashem, with, you know, gave him special Hashgacha and helped David move to avoid the spear. And Shaul, seeing this, of course, Vayira Shaul milifnei David. And in Pasuk Yudbeis, and Shaul was very fearful of David, ki haya Hashem imo umeim Shaul sar, because Hashem was with him, and he had left David. He had left Shaul. So Shaul sees, he tries to kill David twice. David doesn't even notice. David is just doing his thing. He's playing his harp. And Hashem helps David avoid death twice in a row. And as a result of that, Shaul now fears David, and he sees that Hashem is with him. We'll pick up from Yud Gimel next time.
Didn't we always have a Ruach Ro? I mean, or did it ever go away?
No, I don't think he ever really went away.
That's what it says that...